Good evening, everybody. Good evening. This is Veronica Entwistle, and you have tuned into Paradigm Shifters. And we our Paradigm Shifter this week is a very important lady named Lynn Andrews. Lynn ushered us, along with herself, into her shamanic work through Medicine Woman many years ago, and now has a new book called Woman at the Edge of Two Worlds, Spiritual Journey Through Menopause. But we're so honored to have Lynn on our show. Welcome, Lynn.
Well, thank you so very much, Veronica. I'm honored to be on your show.
Yeah, I love this line. Lynn Andrews, 21st century shaman. And to the best of your ability, you took a bunch of us with you, didn't you?
Absolutely.
I don't know where to start, except that I think that starting with how you started your shamanic world is still really relevant. And we can talk about your latest book a little bit farther down, because it's a part of the journey, isn't it?
Yes, it is.
And so do you want to talk about the marriage basket?
Well, I want to talk about whatever you want to talk about. The marriage basket means the marriage of the male and the female. That's the symbolism of it.
Mm-hmm.
And the marriage basket really was an invitation to me many long years ago when I started on this journey. I was living in Beverly Hills, and I had gone to a gallery opening, and we walked in the foyer of this art gallery, and there was a photograph on the wall, very unlike the Stieglitz exhibit photographs that were actually being featured. And I went up to the photograph, and I put my hands, you know, on the frame, and I looked at this picture of a Native American basket, and it was called the Marriage Basket by McKinley, circa something or another. And I felt the north wind in my hair.
Oh, my.
And it was startling at best. And I kind of jumped back and looked at it, and I thought, oh, my God, I've got to buy this photograph. And I told my friend, and he said, oh, my God, let's get out of here. I'm bored, you know, blah, blah. So I left with him. But that night was the first of many, many dreams that I was to have of a very elder Native American woman preferring in her hands this marriage basket that I'd seen in the photograph.
Hmm.
And I went down to buy it the next day and found that it did not exist, that it was literally existing in some parallel reality because they'd never had any such photograph.
Hmm.
And
that
began a journey for me. I went in search of the marriage basket, which took me, to make a very long story short, to the north of Canada to find the keeper of the marriage basket. It turned out to be my teacher, Agnes Whistling Elk, and my mentor, Ruby Plenty Chiefs.
Hmm.
And they were extraordinary women who taught me about the ancient and sacred power of woman. And at the beginning, the marriage basket was part of my journey, which I talk about in Medicine Woman, that is, and I think it's 49th printing at this point.
Oh, my.
It's a book I wrote 26 years ago.
Hmm.
When I was only three, thank
God. And I was five then, but I read it anyway.
Yes, darling.
Well, and that really took you in. Tell me this, were you single at the time? We're talking about intimacy in the show before, and I'm going, were you single? Did you have a family?
I did. I had a daughter, and I was married. We were in the film business. We had a magnificent life, and we were living in Beverly Hills making movies. My ex-husband became one of the heads of Warner Brothers.
Oh, my.
And we were racing cars, and talk about a different life.
Mm-hmm.
And it was wonderful, except that one thing was missing, and I knew it all of my life, actually, that I had no real understanding of the spiritual abilities that I had from birth. I could always see energy fields around people. I could see lights, and I knew that those lights actually were part of someone's illness, happiness, pain, or whatever. I could see that, and it frightened people. People thought I was invading their privacy in some way.
Mm-hmm.
So I never talked about it after I was about 6 years old, actually. I kept it to myself and tried to be something that I was not.
Mm-hmm.
It was in my early 20s that I finally, figured out that you could not live what you are not. You cannot pretend to be something different from what you really and truly are. And I was a seer. I knew that I had some abilities. I just didn't know how to use them or where they came from or anything.
Was your husband aware of them?
Not really.
Hmm.
Not really. He just would kind of go, you know, that's interesting. And, you know, he was busy doing what he was doing, and all of that was fine. I wasn't searching for a spiritual partner at the time. I was looking for a teacher.
Mm-hmm.
And I met many male teachers around the world, but it wasn't until I met Agnes and Ruby, the Sisterhood of the Shields, which are, there's 44 of us actually, Native people around the world who have held this very sacred, precious treasure of a knowledge and wisdom. And it has not been shared often. And through my initiations with them, one of the initiations was to bring this work to others, to be able to take it out into the world, write books, teach about it, and ergo the 19 books I've written.
Hmm. Wonderful, wonderful books. You said around the world, so does that mean out of northern Canada?
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. And it's not tribal medicine.
Okay.
What I have learned and been taught is an ancient tenet that is, it's a female consciousness or take on the world of higher awareness, and which is the world of higher consciousness, how to move from one level of physical consciousness into higher levels where you literally open gateways into places of higher knowledge and understanding. How do you do that? It's all about how do you do that. And why would you want to do that? Because you want, basically, to become enlightened in this lifetime, a word that is bandied around much too much, because enlightenment is very rare.
Mm-hmm. And very precious.
And very precious, oh, yes. It's so, where you want to be. It's what you need to learn in this life.
So the 44 people are all women, I assume, and is that does it rise in them like the marriage basket came to you? Does it rise in them in the same way that they become connected?
In one way or another, maybe not the same archetypes, because they may be in Egypt, they might be in Africa, they might be in South America. So the archetypes tend to run, you know, with the places that they were raised in. But they're very elder women, and the clay pots, there are seven of them, hold ancient scrolls where this wisdom has been configured in symbols, written down. And it is an incredible wisdom. It's not a feminism in any sense of the word, but it understands that there has to be a balance between male and female, that you can live as we are now, living through a patriarch, and that we have lived through a matriarch, you know, 2,500, 3,000 years ago. It was a matriarch. It was, you followed the female line. Now we follow the male line.
Mm-hmm.
And now we're going to move into a time, I believe, anyway, when this is all going to come into balance, finally and at last.
Won't that be wonderful? I want to ask you this. Where do you think this was, that it came from? Do you think it was from, like, Sirius or off the planet, or you think it's just the rising wisdom and consciousness in ancient human life?
Well, Veronica, I really do think, as I've been told, that this wisdom was seeded here from, this sounds so off the charts, but seeded here from the Pleiades many millennium ago.
Great.
And that the Book of the Child, the Book of Original Wisdom, is held in the Valley of Lutang in Tibet. And the clay pots hold these ancient scrolls, and it gives you a guidance and an understanding. I mean, what do you do in your life? You take a look at this incredible prismatic color called our life, and you fit the colors together like a giant puzzle. And how do you fit this together? What does it mean? What does higher consciousness really mean? What does it mean to be a dreamer? What does it mean to be a stalker? You know, you stalk in as a lawyer. You dream as an artist, as a writer, and so forth. All of these things fit together in what you might call the shaman's body of wisdom.
Mm-hmm.
And it's called shamanism, not because it's not a belief structure. It talks about a harmonic of energy. And that's what we're looking for, isn't it, Veronica? We're looking for a harmony. I mean, on Super Tuesday or in the elections,
yeah,
or
a little bit of an oxymoron maybe, but
yeah.
But actually,
in the pursuit of God, you're looking for home.
Yeah, and when you said shaman looking for harmony, but I'm also thinking that the shaman helps us, and you had a better line in Woman at the Edge of Two Worlds, and I can't place my fingers on it right now, but it was about shamanism isn't, it's kind of stepping out of the third dimension to get the greater perspective. I don't think you put it that way, but isn't that what it is?
Well, it is indeed, and I don't know, I'm looking here to see if I can find what you're talking about, but it is... Shamanism is a consciousness. It is having the ability to choreograph the energies in the universe. To be able to do that, you have to be in a place of...
Here it is. It says shamanism is a way of understanding energy.
A way of understanding energy, which is what we're made of.
Yeah, and that's a wonderful line. I'm an energy... I call myself an energy counselor. And an
that's right. In other words, you have to have... the ability to do this. How do you find the ability to do that? You discard the baggage that all of so many people carry throughout their lifetimes of older conditioning. You begin to understand that the brain is really a memory bank and that you think really in the etheric fields,
right,
which has been proven scientifically. And then you begin to understand the body, mind, the heart. You begin to understand what the Trinity is within you.
Hmm.
And where that all comes from. And, you know, I'm going to Egypt. I take a trip to Egypt every year.
Oh, you do?
Uh-huh. We're going at the end of March. Love to have you come.
I'd love to come.
Well, yeah, you should. It's the most fabulous trip in the world. They roll out the red carpet for us, that's for sure.
And what do you feel like you're getting into the Pleiadian roots, or what do you feel like we gain when we go?
Well, you know, I'm an interesting teacher. I don't like to segment things. Oh, this is the Pleiades, and we're from the Pleiades. It may be that the knowledge and wisdom is seeded here from the Pleiades. Frankly, I don't know that for sure. I mean, I haven't met a Pleiadian unless it's, you know, one of my friends. I don't know. I don't care about it. You know, I just know that it is very powerful and way beyond most of the things that you read in recorded history.
Hmm.
You know, when you really think about it, you go to the Sinai, where we're going, by the way, to St. Catherine's Monastery,
mm-hmm.
and they hold some of the most ancient, fabulous writings that have ever been done. For instance, the earliest Bible.
Hmm.
And you look at that and you think, how did that come out of this desert? Nothing grows in this desert.
That's right.
Why did Moses go to the top of Mount Sinai? Where did all these writings come from? Do you know,
mm-hmm.
whatever race it was, whatever religion it was, the great books are profound
mm-hmm.
and seem so far beyond the people that were living at that time.
Mm-hmm.
And anyway,
are you going to sleep in the pyramids and that sort of thing as well?
Oh, heavens, yes. We
okay.
go to Luxor and Karnak, which is the heart of Egypt, and we go up the Nile. It's magnificent.
Wonderful.
And it's, you know, the energy flow, the blood of the source of power. But you see the source of all the religions that are on the earth. You see the source of everything.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, the journey of Christ is carved into one of the sanctuaries, I believe it's Karnak, Luxor or Karnak, 2,500 years before he lived.
Hmm.
So, my goodness, it is an incredible journey. And for anyone, we're supposed to have been talking about the incredible journey of wise blood or menopause, wise blood as I call it, because the journey into your spiritual life is so represented in Egypt in a way.
Wonderful.
You're going up the river of life.
And, well, wonderful, yeah.
You know, and the temples along the way are the different chakra energy points along the body. And, you know, so often we collect energy knots in our energy centers.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if we've had a broken heart, we tend to not let energy go ever any higher than just the heart. So you have energy knots there, and illness, you know, is the result of that if you don't deal with it and heal it.
Right.
Just to be very simplistic.
I'm listening to that, and I'm also thinking about Agnes and Ruby. Did they ever go to Egypt? Do they need to include the physical, like the earth plane stuff, to continue their own growth?
Well, they are very highly enlightened beings, and they're very secret. Nobody knows who they are, which makes it desperately inconvenient for me. I've often said to Agnes, you know, why don't you go out there and do this? Okay, so it's very hard to trust something that you cannot see and feel
right.
in a materialistic world. So, whatever, that is the fact. They are all over the world. And one of the women is in near Egypt, and I can't say where, but I meet with her. I'm going to write a book about her in the clay pot that she is the keeper of.
Do you know all these women?
Oh, yes.
Oh, wonderful.
See, but they're extraordinary, beyond your imagining, actually.
Wow. So you think that a lot of what you're doing, the whole shamanistic route, is just the route through our conditioning?
Well, in a sense it is. Yes, of course it is. I think anything that has to do with higher awareness has to move through your conditioning. And conditioning is something that, as I remember, you choose this. You choose your conditioning. Imagine for a moment that you, there are two things. In spirit, before you're born, just imagine for a minute. Mm-hmm. Let your imagination go and think of sitting, you know, on a big table or place, and there are your higher beings of light that have guided you throughout lifetimes are sitting with you, and you have your soul, and the soul and your spirit and soul, has a spirit shield, what I call a spirit shield. And on that spirit shield, your different lifetimes are symbolized on that spirit shield in the different directions. It's the south, north, east, and west. North being spirit, south being physical effort, and west being emotions, mind, and rationality are in the east. And you look at that spirit shield with your guides, your guardians, your gods or goddesses, and you see that there are places on that shield that are weaker than others.
Mm-hmm.
So you choose a lifetime where you can strengthen that direction.
Mm-hmm.
So you might be born into a family, say, that inherits from one life to the next, one generation to the next, diabetes, say.
Mm-hmm.
And you're born into a family with diabetes. Now, that, to me, on a very simplistic level, would mean that that family has trouble metabolizing the sweetness in their life.
Mm-hmm.
So they choose to go in, maybe. You might choose to be born into that family so that you can change that. You have an opportunity to change that. In other words, when a family inherits a disease, oftentimes the kids say, oh, well, you know, everybody gets diabetes in my family by the time they're 40.
Mm-hmm.
And if you say that, it will happen.
Mm-hmm. That's for sure.
And we're jumping all over the place here.
I like that part. Well, let's talk about women at the edge of two worlds, because it's about menopause, and what I love about it, and I didn't finish the entire book, but I read some of it, and it's talking about how we need to honor and ceremonialize the various phases of awakening we go through in life, isn't it?
Yes, it's the rites of passage.
And we don't really honor that in our society, do we?
Mm-mm. In fact, we try and hide it.
Mm-hmm.
So often when you're going into menopause, you shrink away from telling anybody because it sounds like you're about to step over the hill.
That you're getting old, girl.
Oh, you're getting old.
You can't make babies anymore.
Uh-huh. And what it actually is, wise blood is an exquisite period of time, and if you are experiencing tremendous hot flashes, lots of times that's burning up old stuff, negativity, any kind of fluff that you carry on your luminous fibers throughout your life. It's just burning things away. It's burning away.
My guides often say you can't hold the same patterns anymore.
Mm-mm.
And that's really a gift, isn't it?
Well, it is, isn't it? I mean, well, as long as those patterns didn't serve you.
Right.
And you go into the spiritual time of your life. You've done the physical things. You've most likely, by 50, had your family and raised them. You've progressed in a career. And all of a sudden, you find yourself at this incredibly powerful gateway that the world says is not so great.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a very interesting thing. All the different aspects of woman have been denied for about the last 2,500 years, don't you think?
Yeah, because you just said the world says, and I'm going, isn't that what we're always dealing with? The world says this, but I see this. The world says this, but I know this, you know?
Right, but you're at least one down as a woman anyway.
Yeah.
In this particular society. We've chosen this. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's not a bad thing. It's just something you have to learn from. And it's not something that you bellyache about and complain about. It's something that you have to see. Okay, I've started one down because I'm more powerful than any of you anyway. It's like a handicap in golf, you know.
Well, and in this book you talk about ceremonializing. Can you talk a bit about that?
Well, ceremony is a beautiful thing. Ritual is one thing. Mm-hmm. A lot of the native people around the world do rituals. They do it exactly the same every year at the same time and the same words and so forth. With ceremony, you're bringing a part of yourself into it. So the ceremony changes every time you do it. And I do a lot of ceremony with people who are in first blood as well.
Mm.
Because that is never appreciated and celebrated.
Mm-hmm.
That's when you have to, in many native traditions, because there's no Tampax, there's no way to Kotex, there's no way to be clean, quote-unquote.
Mm-hmm.
So they put you in a lodge, a moon lodge.
Mm-hmm.
And because, not because it's a celebrated time so often, but because you're dirty.
Right.
And how tragic that is.
It is.
It's the curse. You know?
Yeah, that's true. Mm-hmm.
And even my mom called it the curse.
A lot of my friends have called it that. We don't so much now. Of course, we don't have it now. But
well, now things have changed, so.
Yeah.
I thank heaven, because we've all written and talked about it till we're blue in the face.
That's right. The blue-faced reality.
Yeah.
Yeah. But the idea is we need to honor these rites of passage of the woman according to her cycle, right?
Right, and you don't, and people go into fear. They go into this thing where now they're going to, you know, they're going to let their hair go gray and they're not going to be interested in sex anymore, and they don't know how to comfort their spirit. Mm-hmm. And there are a lot of aspects of recapitulation, of going, you know, over your life and seeing what hasn't worked for you. It's a good time to do that.
Mm-hmm. But it isn't true that, first of all, you can color your hair, A, but B, a lot of people tell me they have really good sexual appetite.
That's right.
Yeah.
And that's because they love themselves. And, but hey, I'm not saying don't let your hair go gray. Mm-hmm. I'm just saying they, it's like they give up a little.
They give up. Mm-hmm.
They give up beauty.
Mm-hmm.
They give up being the beautiful, fabulous woman that they are.
Mm-hmm.
Instead
of saying, okay, here I am at a new level of wisdom, and now I'm really going to move forward my way.
Right. It's the changing woman gateway.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a celebration. And it is a new life. It is. It's your spiritual time. And not that you leave your family and go off to a mountaintop, but you begin to understand that fire that is within you.
Mm-hmm.
And you begin to balance that. And you begin to, you know, you become familiar with Bone Woman, the keeper of the bones.
Hmm.
And you begin to see Wise Blood in the four directions. And you learn about herbs, and you learn about hormones. Yes, it's a big deal. Estrogen governs about 300 different functions in your body.
Wow. So you recommend people take herbal you know, what is it you recommend to people who are having a really hard time with it? Is hormonal replacement or herbal
stuff? There's been so little long-term research.
You're right.
You know, women weren't expected to live past the age of 50 at the turn of the century. And,
but that's a huge discussion these days about whether to take something or whether that's really, you know, betraying the reality of your journey or whatever.
Oh, for Pete's sake.
Yeah.
I don't agree with that. I do think that everything is natural. Where do they think it comes from?
Right.
Even if something is made through chemistry, you still have aspects that come from nature. But it's a terrible thing to take Premarin because of what they do to horses.
Right.
You know, a pregnant mare's urine is what that comes from, and what they do to the mares and slaughtering of the colts, etc., is a horrifying. You do not want that in your body.
Right.
Now, there are many different things that you can take. You can do bioidentical hormones, which are very wonderful for some women.
Mm-hmm. I've heard some great things. I haven't done it yet myself, but I've heard great things from women.
Yeah, but for some women it doesn't work.
Hmm.
It just depends on you.
Sounds like
I have friends who have said, I take, I think they take estrus, or I don't know what it is, but it's a regular estrogen and progesterone, a very, very low dosage, and they take it on a patch, and it changed their life.
Mm-hmm.
They went from horrible depression. And, you know, many people have been hospitalized in sanitariums because they go nuts when estrogen leaves the body.
Right.
Other people, it's the greatest thing that ever happened to them. You know, it just depends on you and how hormones affect you. They are incredibly powerful.
Yeah.
And so you have to, it's an adjustment that each and every woman has to make, but it surely helps if you look at it with a different attitude, not the attitude of shame,
mm-hmm.
or hiding or thinking that life is over for you.
Or that I have to stay young and now my body's not letting me.
Right, and there's a word that people use all the time, which I absolutely hate, and this is just me, and that's crone,
mm-hmm.
because it implies an old crone.
Mm-hmm.
And you know that our bodies regenerate every 7 years.
Yes, I know.
This aging thing is an agreement that we make long before we're born,
mm-hmm.
that we're young and we're going to go through all of this stuff, and then we're going to grow, and then you're going to die. Well, I've got news for you. A lot of people don't die like this,
mm-hmm.
but it's a process of becoming enlightened enough to move out of this ritual of aging.
I agree with you totally. In my 60s, I'm having more aliveness, more fun, more potential than I ever expected at this point.
Oh, it's true.
Yeah.
And you, more than you ever expected. You see what you just said?
Yes.
And there's no reason for that.
Well, I think it's just program, and we're just trying to unprogram, deprogram, right?
Well, it is, and it's an attitude.
Mm-hmm.
It's, wait a minute. You know, these things are true scientifically, so why is my DNA wearing out?
Mm-hmm.
Your DNA wears out, and then you get lines in your face because the cells are not restructuring the way they did when you were young.
Mm-hmm.
So why is that? Now, why is that happening? What is this agreement? And it's a... You know, when you have a whole world that agrees to it, it's pretty darn hard to go the other direction.
Well, we've heard stories like Lazarus, who's a channel being, says...
Oh, yes, I know him.
And he says that, apparently, that we're programmed by the Palladian, our ancestors, and they didn't want us to live too long because there weren't enough resources.
Well, you know what? Compared to a few years ago, there's a whole lot more people on this planet.
But also, we can now learn to make our resources more, you know, more efficient to cover the world better. But that's a whole other subject, isn't it?
Yeah, it is a whole other subject. It's an interesting one, but I don't think there's much danger of so many people becoming enlightened that they live forever.
Actually, I have to agree with you. talk about your school. I think it sounded, I'm already enjoying what you're teaching, so let's talk about how you teach all this in the school.
Well,
and I also really recommend this book. It's wonderful.
Oh, thanks, Veronica. And, you know, it's interesting that how the school came about. I never would have dreamed in my wildest imagination that I'd be doing what I'm doing now, because I've always thought of myself as an author, you know, an author, not a teacher guru type situation. And it's interesting what happened. I was on book tour, and then I started writing like a book a year from my experiences with the women. And they were successful, and they were touching people. And so then I had more and more spiritual counseling kind of appointments with people, and I suddenly realized I was so exhausted I couldn't even move. And I thought, I went, had counsel with the women, and I said, you know, I can't do this completely by myself. I said, I'm going to have to develop a school so that we can, for one thing, everybody needs this that I meet, but also just working with someone for an hour or even a year isn't enough. They have to go deeply into this subject, let's just say energy. You have to learn about what kind of energy you are,
mm-hmm.
what kind of energy you've chosen as a way to express your personality in life.
And that is a huge, huge search right there, isn't it?
Right there. It takes mm-hmm. a whole year of I teach people through experience. I have a school without walls so that you don't have to come to a campus mm-hmm. because I felt that was desperately limiting.
Mm-hmm.
People have lives. These teachings need to be used in your life. If you can't use this on Wall Street or living on the streets of L.A. or being a housewife in Georgia, you know, what good is this?
Right.
So, and people can't leave their lives for the most part. So I said, okay, we'll design a school somehow that will help people anywhere in the world. And we come together for a couple of trainings a year. And so it's like standing under a waterfall. You stand under the waterfall and you feel the water and you know that that water is flowing and flowing and flowing. And in that first year, you learn that about energy.
Hmm.
You don't try and hold it or define it. You just let it flow and you begin to realize that everything around you is made out of that same energy. So the first lesson of power is that we're all alone. The last lesson of power is that we're all one. But you have to experience that to understand it.
Yeah.
So the first year is about energy, the flow of energy. Then the second year is about closing your fingers under that waterfall and beginning to see that it is very difficult to hold that water, very, very difficult to hold that energy. And there's a whole process of experience you go through visualizations, through making beautiful acts of beauty, I'll say. And we do that through paintings and building beautiful instruments and things that you would never imagine that you were capable of doing.
That also conduct energy, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And then the third year is about holding energy. You finally grab a hold of it. Why is an object sacred? Why is my sacred pipe more sacred than yours or have more power? Why is that mountain sacred? Why is Kailash the mountain that they go to and walk around and do pilgrimage? Do you see?
Mm-hmm.
Why is it that your drum has such a mesmerizing sound? Do you see?
Mm-hmm, I do, actually. And is it your school that goes to Egypt?
No.
It's not all connected.
Thing, but a lot of people in the school do go.
You have many students?
Online courses as well. If you go up on www.lynandrews.com, you will see the lectures and all the stuff I do. And the fourth year is about manifesting. It's about manifesting energy, taking that energy and putting it out in the world. How do you do that from a place of freedom? How do you do that from your own circle of truth, which is what you learn in the school? How do I find my circle of truth? Hmm. How do I get there? And you define it slowly, through experience, through this process. And it's just fabulous. People change their lives.
Wow. And you do it all online?
Oh, no. The school, the main school, Lynn Andrews School for Sacred Arts and Training, is I wrote the entire curriculum. Mm-hmm. So over those 4 years, you receive four very large books that we go through many different things, many practices and things together and things on our own, and then we come together for training.
Oh, and you have other teachers?
My teachers are mentors. Mm-hmm. They are graduate students of mine that I've worked with for many long years. And they work with the students. I work with them on the phone or online, and then when we come together for trainings, we work together in person.
Hmm.
It's an extraordinary school.
How long have you been running it?
Well, we're going into 11, 12 years now.
Wow.
Yeah, we've got, you know, thousands of graduates at this, hundreds, I don't know how many, but a lot.
Well, and I know also you are really good with horses and so on. Do you have the equine facilitated learning as a part of your school, or is that just a separate issue with you?
Well, it's a separate issue, but I do. Some people, I work with them with horses. You know, it's very interesting about horses to me, and this has been since I was very, very young. I've always had horses. And that's been a great gift to me. It certainly got me through a very, very difficult childhood. And they're antennas between spirit and earth to me.
Mm, wonderful way of putting it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Do you have horses?
No, I don't, but I've had some time. I haven't had anything to do with horses for about 6 or 8 years, but for a while I was learning a lot in Tucson, Arizona, and I was doing a lot of healing on horses.
Oh, really?
And finding myself very skitterish, timid, learning to ride, and not very good at it, but loving it, you know?
Mm-hmm.
But it's been a long time, and I haven't had the access, but I will. Maybe.
Oh, well, horses will find you, maybe.
Yeah, I'm just wonderful. I'm always happy to hear about the various things that are going on with equine-facilitated learning and the kinds of healing horses are doing on the planet and what's being done to them that's healing as well.
Yes, and for heaven's sake, you know, be conscious. All of your incredible listeners of, you know, cruelty to animals, always, always take care of the animals that are around you.
Well, you know, and many people tell me, we know a lot about, say, dolphins and whales and so on, and how they have the records of, you know, of life. But I feel like that's true about horses, too.
Oh, my gosh, yes. Mm-hmm. Horses have such wisdom, and so do dogs. Animals do.
Animals do.
They have a magnificent spirit. And for some reason, well, for very obvious reasons, it suddenly became man over beast.
Mm-hmm.
Man has the domain over lower species, that species like animals don't have souls, you know, don't have spirits like we do. And I think that's mistaken. That's just my idea.
No, I think you're absolutely right, but I don't know. Anyway, that's a whole intellectual discussion, because I believe there's strongly a force in our lives.
Hugely. They're keepers. You know, it was wonderful. Well, let me tell you. I was walking up Canyon Road in Santa Fe one beautiful day, and I went into a shop, and they had pre-Columbian art there. It was owned by a friend of mine, and I went to this little case, and I saw these beautiful figurines from pre-Columbian times, and there were two dogs that were lifted up on their hind legs, and they had their front paws on what was obviously a patient lying on a bed. And in working with dogs and with animals, I knew exactly what was happening. They were healing that person. They were absorbing the illness of that person. And, you know, that's been going on forever in the world of shamanism.
Mm-hmm.
It's a way of doctoring. It's a way of medicine. It's a way of your dog's at home. How often do you see somebody getting a divorce and one of the dogs die?
Right, that's right. And they also arrive and sit where people are ill. Consciously, they'll sit on that part of the body, they'll sit on that part of the head, and, yeah, they're really very amazing. I think I haven't had dogs till recently. We had a 10-year-old Maltese given to us.
Oh.
And was kind of like a rescue situation, but he's bringing so much love that's the thing that I'm becoming more and more aware of.
Oh.
You know, it's like a little love.
Unconditional love.
Yeah, it's amazing.
Yes, it is.
Tell me about shape-shifting. do you know, do you do shape shifting?
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
But shape shifting is an interesting subject because you're seeing the world moving through shape shifting right now. You are seeing people, for instance, let's just take something very ordinary, and you see people going, switching from Democrat to Republican. That is a gigantic shapeshift within somebody's mental concept or emotional concept. And then spiritually, that's a spiritual concept. You want the world to be better. You're choosing a situation where you hope the world or our country will be served in a better way. Mm-hmm. Do you see? You're seeing that as a healing decision.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I'm just saying, you know, the universal you. When you are working with so-called primitive people, I have to laugh because you go into the world of the native world, the true native world, and you see that people want for absolutely nothing in a tribal society. Of course, they don't live like we do. We think that they're poverty-stricken.
Mm-hmm.
But what they really are is they are living in perfect harmony with the earth if they're left alone. People, you know, if you're living in the jungles of Brazil and you haven't had your forest cut down yet, you are living with all the medicine plants on the earth. You are living with everything that you could possibly need. And a shaman in Brazil, say, would tell you that you need to shape-shift out of a place where a disease can live. I would tell you, as a shaman person, that if you are in, or if you have a disease, you do not need to live in a frequency where that disease can survive.
Okay,
you need to shift your frequency. How do you do that? By changing your concept or your attitude about menopause from being a place of shame and or having your period and calling it the curse to all of a sudden realizing that you are sharing the same blood that our great mother shares, that we are of this extraordinary species that can give life. And that has a way of germinating with the male counterpart, the continuation of an entire breed of animal, of people, that being in your moon is a sacred thing. That's a change of attitude. And that is a shapeshift. You shapeshift out of feeling that you're no longer worthy in life to suddenly, wow, you know, I've written a lot of books, you know. Boy, I have accomplished something. And no, not everybody can do that. I'm a special person. You know, that's a shapeshift.
Okay. And at that point, there can be a great deal of healing, can't there?
Well, yes, because you've changed your frequency.
And you've given gratitude to what might have been a curse before. Yeah. Are called a curse, right?
Well, we can shapeshift this world through the process of joy. If you have joy in your heart and your soul, you've been able to reach that place. Your heart, your heart consciousness cannot feel pain, fear, terror, depression. That's part of your brain process and conditioning and or conditioning that you've received through family inheritance or whatever. But you can change that by moving your consciousness into your heart. If you love, truly love, you've changed the frequency from fear to love. If you're living in your head, in your mind, in this thing of, I'm not worthy because I'm a woman who has nothing. I have nothing to share, nothing to give. First of all, that is not the truth. There isn't a woman or man alive that cannot be in a blissful state of joy. But you have to unload all that baggage that you carried your whole life to get there.
Can you recommend a technique or a style or a meditation or something?
Well, I would certainly read one of my books.
I recommend all of them, actually.
All of them, because they're you know, it's interesting. I write about my own experience. Mm-hmm. For instance, in Jaguar Woman, it was on the New York Times bestseller list. I talk about being in the jungles of the Yucatan with Soyla, and her taking me to this extraordinary chasm in the middle of nowhere. And she wanted me to walk on this little trail behind her down this chasm to the bottom. And I had a fear of heights. I was terrified. I had these sandals on that my feet would slip in and out of. And she wanted me to walk, and she just said, "You come with me, you follow me, do as I do. If you do not, I will never dream nor work with you again."
Oh, my.
And so, you know, sobbing, I you know, started down this tiny little trail that was about a foot and a half wide, the big cliff going down, thousands of feet on my left and up on my right. And I followed her, and I went through my fear. I thought, well, I'm going to die. I am surely going to die. It was kind of muddy, mm-hmm. kind of slick as it is, you know, in a rainforest area. And, oh, my God, I was terrified.
So it would be hours of process.
It was. Mm-hmm. I just went. I mm-hmm. had to go. Mm-hmm. And she had left me a beautiful jewel along the way, a treasure. And she said, "You take that on your way down. You take that." And I didn't take it because I didn't think I deserved it.
Oh, my.
And by the time we got down to the bottom, I got stuck in quicksand, which was very symbolic of the mess I was in my head and how I was not feeling my own worthiness.
Mm-hmm.
So that's kind of what I mean about...
How did you get out of it, Lynn?
Well, I finally got out of it by taking the help that Soyla gave me.
Mm.
You know, taking the jewel, a different kind of jewel. But it was the jewel of life. It was the treasure of life for me.
Mm.
And she, you know, extended some help to me. I thought, for the second time that day, I thought I was going to die. And it was an extraordinary experience. I've been through these experiences that... Most people just shake their heads and go, "My God!" And I needed those kinds of experiences to be jarred out of where I was. I'm not saying everybody else has to.
Mm-hmm. Well, you did it for a lot of us, I think, eh?
Yeah, well, a lot of people don't. You know, mm-hmm. a lot of people are not as slow as I am.
Oh. It seems to me if you've written 19 books and your and Medicine Woman came out 26 years ago, is that right?
Yeah, it is.
So you've been doing like a book a year.
I have been.
Almost, yeah.
Yeah, I have been indeed. And then I wrote School, which are four huge books.
Wow. And your journey has been all the way through these books, right?
Yes.
How amazing.
In other words, if I had a fear of, oh, I know, my second book had to do with my initiation into the sisterhood, but also had to do with dealing with all of the different aspects of my father that was so hard for me. And the experiences that they put me through to make me see myself. When you make an act of power in life, if you want to see something about yourself, look at something that you really want to do, really so much. Oh, I want to write a book. So sit down and start writing. Because in the process of starting to write, you will provide a mirror for yourself. And that mirror is the best teacher you will ever have.
So it'll bring up your issues and your fears and
you
your
bet.
Resistances.
And your frailties and, oh, my God, I'm not good enough. And, oh, my God, you know, what am I trying to prove? And this has already been done and blah, blah, blah.
Did you ever face that one?
Well, sure, when I wrote Medicine Woman. The hardest thing I ever did. I nearly had a nervous breakdown.
Oh, my, really?
It's oh, God.
Such a wonderful book.
Yeah, well, thank you. Thank you so much. I wrote, my latest book is a book called Writing Spirit, Finding Your Creative Soul.
Oh, that sounds wonderful. Well, this one's wonderful as well, Woman at the Edge of Two Worlds, The Spiritual Journey Through Menopause. It's also wonderful. But, of course, I keep going back to Medicine Woman, and I think because in my remembrance, many, many of us were awakened along with you. That book took us into something where we all began to move farther, you see.
Well, you know, we were a long ways behind where we are now.
Mm-hmm.
I published that in 1980.
Mm-hmm.
And at that time, women were so afraid of taking their power.
Right.
And I wanted so much to give women power, to show that if I could do it, you can do it.
Mm-hmm.
And I jumped right into the middle of my fears, and I wrote about that. I wrote about my frailties and my, oh, my heavens.
And how they made fun of you at times.
Oh, my God, I was just, oh, they were just
I needed to hear
funny
that.
With me.
Boy, and there was a fear of being crazy if you went off the center, and, boy, you really went off. It was great. There was nothing crazy about you, girl.
But, you know, I just wrote about my frailties, and then there was a lot of discussion about, oh, my gosh, you know, you're writing about Native Americans, you're stealing their truth, and I said, this has nothing to do with Native Americans. It has to do with my, you know, my learning about what my frailties.
Well, it's stepping out of that social, the collective wooing thing that tells us how life is. You stepped out of it and really got with your strengths and empowerments. It's wonderful.
Oh, well, thank you.
Yeah, I really appreciate it. And also the cards that you have and so on.
Oh, the power deck.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's interesting. The cards I wrote the cards called the Power Deck because I felt that people never pray. You know, they're so busy. They never have time. So I designed the Power Deck. There's 44 different cards with 44 different paintings on them, and you pull a card. For instance, you might pull a card, The Unknown.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a picture of a fabulous painting done by a Dutch artist who, it's just the most, his name is Rob Schouten, and he's just a fabulous painter. And then I would write, very much like the ancient cards, there was an ancient deck of cards that the Sisterhood has, and if you pull The Unknown cards, it says we're all pilgrims on the path to the unknown. We sit in awe and wonder at the architecture of power. And in the painting, is of someone sitting looking at the pyramids in Egypt. And it's, you know, the paintings relate to the teachings, and they're a way to pray.
Mm.
A short message on the card, but it puts you into a different state of mind so that when you go out in your day, it's a way of touching back to that place within yourself that is your freedom.
A real realignment. I want to ask you something personal. Is that all right?
Yes.
Are you single? Are you on your own now?
I am with a partner.
Oh, good. A special
partner. It is an interesting journey. I have been married twice,
mm-hmm.
and I have a daughter, and
she
journeys with me a lot. She's married.
Mm-hmm.
She lives in another part of the country, which is horrible. We've always been a family where, you know, we all lived very close to one another. And now we're a long ways apart.
Well, you're in the center of the country now, are you? Where are you?
I'm in Arizona.
Oh, are you?
Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm.
I'm in Arizona. And
I asked about your private world. I didn't mean to be intrusive. It's just that many people, looking at the truth with which you appear to have gone through so many of your journeys, wonder, and many will ask me this, do you have to remain single to continue to do this?
Oh, my heavens, no.
Okay, well,
remain single? Oh, God, no.
Yeah.
I mean, I left my life because I was on the verge of that anyway.
Mm-hmm.
No, in fact, that's what I was saying before. And maybe that wasn't clear, or I wasn't saying it clearly enough. The reason that I wanted to do A School Without Walls is so that people didn't have to give up their life.
Right.
They didn't have to go to the north of Canada or into Tibet, where I spent some time, or Australia, or where I wrote Crystal Woman and so forth and so on. You don't have to do that.
Mm-hmm.
The truth is within you,
mm-hmm.
and you don't have to leave your family and your husband or your mate or whoever.
When you're a paradigm shifter, you really have a huge impact on the collective as well. I believe that, and you've done that. So that gives a lot of us a little bit more access to maybe parts of ourselves we weren't considering before.
Yeah, well, I hope that it's a shift into the paradigm of your own personal truth. And it certainly, I mean, my books certainly talk about my frailties and what I learned with these extraordinary women of power.
Mm-hmm.
And I've been so blessed.
Well, we were blessed to have you on the show, Lynn Andrews, and thank you so much for coming on to Paradigm Shifters. And we'll check your website LynnAndrews.com for the latest happenings and for the books. He's buying books and cards and going to Egypt, right?
And Hawaii. We go to Hawaii every year.
Oh, what do you do in Hawaii? Swim with dolphins?
I give an event, and we swim with dolphins. You bet we do, and the great sea turtles.
Wonderful.
And we have just I thought it was going to be rejuvenui, but it ends up being an absolutely fabulous event. And we stay at the Mauna Lani on the big island of Kona. Not Kona. I'm all right. On the big island of Hawaii, outside of Kona.
How long is the event?
4 days.
Great. So we find all of this on your website, and there is a newsletter that people can sign up for as well.
Uh-huh. It is indeed a wonderful letter,
mm-hmm.
and it gives information. And I have a graduate school. When people leave the school, they really want to stay part of the circle. And so I started a graduate school. We meet once a year at Ghost Ranch in New Mexico.
Hmm.
And it's quite a fabulous circle of people, I must say.
How wonderful.
I am so proud of everybody.
Well, thank you so much, Lynn. And we're being hooked off stage right now, and I really appreciate you. Thank you so much.
Veronica, thank you so much, and so many blessings and so much love to you.
And to you.
Okay, namaste.
Namaste. Well, that was Lynn Andrews. Check her website. It's really inspiring, just as she is. This is Veronica Entwistle saying thank you for tuning in to Paradigm Shifters, and our shifter next week is Carolyn Corey, who works with the movement of energies throughout the universe. She's an intuitive. She has a very unique style of working with people, but her perspective, which she talks about in the Divine Plan 2012, in fact, she has, well, I don't have the other names of her books here right now, but she's just a really very, very interesting and unique person, giving us a different perspective on 2012 and what that really means to all of us. So tune in, and Thursday night I'll be talking with Jackie Salvitti, and I'm not exactly sure what we're talking about this week, but last week it was a celebration of the miraculous energy that's moving through our consciousness right now through the universe. She's also talking about universal flows, so tune in at 8 o'clock here on BBS Radio, and I'll be on next Tuesday on Radiance by Design at 4 p.m. West Coast time, and then Paradigm Shifter at 5 o'clock with Carolyn Corey. So much love to all of you. Thank you for listening, and many blessings. Email me if you have an idea or a question, veronica@veronicaentwistle.com, veronica@veronicaentwistle.com. Good night.